You ever feel like staying on top of what's happening in your own backyard? I mean, especially when it comes to how your town is growing, changing economically. It's just this never-ending climb.
Oh, definitely.
You see projects, you hear things, but getting the whole picture, it feels like this massive puzzle with pieces scattered everywhere.
That feeling, that information overload, it's so common. And that's exactly what we're diving into today. We've got these Big Lake Economic Authority budgets for 2025 right through to 2030.
The BL, right.
BLNDA, yeah.
Yeah.
And look, these aren't just spreadsheets. They're basically a roadmap. They show Big Lake's economic plans, what they're focusing on, the kind of growth they want, and, you know, the strategies to get there.
Exactly. So our mission here, if you will, is to pull out the really important stuff, the most, well, interesting insights from these BLEE budgets. We want to give you, the listener, a clear, engaging look at Big Lake's economic playbook without getting totally bogged down in the
We'll even
numbers.
put through the noise.
Yeah, we'll look at what Bilardo actually is, what powers it has, their money situation, income, expenses, their big goals for the next few years, and the policies. You know, things like loans for businesses, tax incentives, TIF, tax abatement, all that.
The full picture.
Okay, let's unpack it. To start, what is this Big Lake Economic Authority, BLEDA? What's its job?
Good starting point. So the documents make it clear. BLEDA is its own legal thing, separate from the city of Big Lake itself.
Oh, okay.
But, and this is key, it really functions as part of the city government.
Yeah.
Everything it does is exclusively for Big Lake. Think of it like a specialized arm of the city focused just on economic and housing development.
So not some outside group. It's baked right into the city structure.
Precisely. It actually started from city council resolution way back in 1990. It gets its authority from Minnesota Statute 469.
Okay.
And what's really interesting is how they bundled responsibilities. BLEDA isn't just about, say, attracting new businesses. It also acts as the Housing and Redevelopment Authority.
Ah, so housing too.
Yeah, that dual role lets them tackle, you know, rundown areas, blight, but also work proactively to stop areas from becoming blighted. They have pretty broad powers. They can even buy and sell property.
Wow, okay. Buying and selling property directly? That seems like a big deal. It means they can really get hands-on with development projects, right?
It does. It gives them real leverage.
And they meet monthly, advise the council, board members appointed by the mayor and council. That really shows how integrated they are.
Absolutely. That structure keeps their work locked in with the city's wider goals. Okay, so finances. Let's shift gears to the money. The budget gives us that detailed view of where it comes from and where it's going.
Right. Let's talk money then. Main income streams for BLEDA. What are we looking at?
Okay, so primarily two things. The property tax levy that gets assigned to BLEDA.
A slice of the city's property tax haul.
Exactly. And then interest they earn on their cash reserves. For 2025, the plan is a $130,000 levy. That's the same as 2024.
Holding steady for now.
For now. But if you look further out in their projections, you see planned increases. It bumps up to $160,000 in 2026, then $210,000 in 2027, and hits $250,000 by 2029.
Okay. So they're planning to grow their budget, suggests they expect to do more.
Yeah, it looks like a strategic move to, you know, boost their financial muscle over time, probably for bigger initiatives down the line.
Makes sense. Were there other like big money movements mentioned? Anything that jumped out?
Yes, definitely. There was a pretty significant transfer, $600,000 back in 2022. That came from the city's capital improvement funds.
600,000. Wow, what for?
Specifically earmarked to set up a fund for redevelopment and buying property.
Ah, tying back to their power to buy land.
Exactly. And the budget shows they've already used some of it. They bought the building that's attached to City Hall and also some land where potentially a new City Hall could go.
So they're actively acquiring key spots? That's very hands-on.
It really suggests they plan to directly shape how things develop physically.
Okay. What about regular spending? Ongoing costs? Anything noteworthy there?
Well, since 2020, there's this steady annual transfer. $50,000 goes to the Industrial Park Expansion Land Purchase Fund. That's basically covering debt payments for infrastructure work out there.
So a long-term commitment to that industrial area.
Seems like it. Shows it's a priority. Oh, and also, there was a shift in how they allocate the salary for the community development director.
Okay.
That person is also BLEDA's executive director. It used to be split 50-50, BLEDA and the city's general fund. But in 2023, it changed to 25% BLEDA's, 75% general fund.
Why the change?
The document says it reflects more accurately how much time that director actually spends on BLEDA's specific work versus general city duties. Just truing up the books, basically.
Right, just an accounting adjustment. Makes sense. I also spotted something about lease revenue going down in 2025. What's that about?
Yeah. That's because the tenant in that building attached to City Hall, the one they bought part of, exercised an option to buy the vacant space next door.
Ah, so Bolito was renting that space out.
Correct. So they lose that lease income. Mm. But on the flip side, it could mean that space gets developed or used now that it's privately owned.
Got it. So looking at 2025 spending overall, what are the big buckets?
The main categories are employee services, contractual services like hiring consultants or studies general supplies and services, a dedicated $50,000 line item for marketing.
Marketing the city, presumably.
Yes. And then that recurring transfer out for the industrial park debt. Those are the highlights.
Okay, clear picture on the finances. Now, the fun part, looking ahead, the budgets include a strategic plan, right?
Hmm.
What are the big goals, priorities?
They do. It covers 3 years, 2024 through 2026. And the feel of it is very practical, realistic goals.
Good. What's the main thrust?
The big picture priority really flows from Blade Eye's mission, efficiently help development happen, while also supporting the businesses already here and just generally driving economic growth in Big Lake.
Sounds straightforward enough. How are they planning to do that?
Oh.
Specific strategies?
Yeah, they lay out several key ones. First is actively marketing the city of Big Lake. A big piece of that is running their business retention and expansion program, BRNE, they call it.
Keeping existing businesses happy and helping them grow.
Exactly. Second big goal, market and sell Industrial Park Phase 2 land. They've even set a deadline, end of 2026.
Ambitious. What's the plan there?
Things like getting the property ready, staging it, direct marketing to brokers, developers, showing up at industry events, you know, beating the drum.
A proactive sales job. Makes sense. What else?
Another strategy is about property BLADA, or the city already owns. They call it recognize BLADA and city-owned property.
Yeah.
Basically, figure out what to do with specific key sites.
Ooh, yeah.
They list several. 420 Putnam Avenue, the City Hall site, plus the old community school building, 421 Foley Avenue, and that corner lot at Martin Avenue and Eagle Lake Road.
We're getting really specific there.
They are. And the strategy involves things like watching nearby parcels, maybe opportunities to assemble larger sites, holding the land for the right project, and actively trying to remove any roadblocks to development.
That level of detail on specific properties is interesting. Does it suggest they've already got ideas, or maybe they see particular challenges there?
It's likely a bit of both. Naming specific sites lets them focus planning and resources. Maybe it's based on market analysis, maybe infrastructure, maybe just seeing potential and underused spots. It feels very deliberate.
Very intentional, yeah. Are they only focused on land they own?
No, not at all. Another strategy is recognizing privately owned commercial and industrial property. The idea is to encourage development there, too.
So working with private owners?
Right. They specifically mention the Innovation Industrial Park, buildings in the downtown area, and even reference properties owned by specific individuals, like Gramsci's and Burns properties.
Okay, so they're looking citywide, trying to spur investment everywhere, not just on public land.
That's the impression. It's a broader vision.
What about building connections, finding other money sources?
That fits under their goal to increase Bledo community presence. This covers a few things. Keeping up to date on all the business financing tools out there.
Knowing what help is available.
Exactly. Working closely with the city's finance director on, you know, potential budget strategies for Bledo projects. Actively going after grants, like trying for the Minnesota Investment Fund.
MIF grants, okay.
And just building relationships with businesses, schools, regional groups, developers, the whole network. And importantly, promoting and managing their revolving loan fund.
The RLF. We definitely need to talk about that. And there was one more strategic piece, reviewing policies.
Right. Making sure their tools are sharp. The document mentions they just reviewed the revolving loan fund policy, finished that in September 2024.
Okay, good timing.
And it also highlights what they look for in public-private partnerships for redevelopment. Needs a commercial aspect, must increase the tax base, and add overall economic value to Big Lake.
That sets clear expectations. Okay, this gives us a great map of their strategy. Let's dive into those tools now, those policies. Starting with that revolving loan fund, the RLF. What's the core idea there?
The RLF, yeah, it's a key tool. It provides direct loans to businesses. The revolving part is crucial. As loans get paid back, the money goes back into the pot.
So it can be loaned out again.
Exactly. It creates this sustainable source of funding for local businesses. The main goals are to help with startup or expansion costs, maybe offer slightly better terms than a bank, and ultimately help grow the city's property tax base.
A self-funding engine for local business growth. Cool. Yeah. Who can apply? What businesses are eligible?
Okay, eligibility. You need a physical address in Big Lake. Your business type has to fit the zoning rules. You need to be a proper legal entity, registered and in good standing.
Standard stuff.
Pretty standard. Also, no delinquent city bills or taxes, and no outstanding city code violations, unless you're actually borrowing the money to fix those violations.
Interesting. So you could use it to get into compliance. What can they use the loan for?
It's fairly broad. Buying land or buildings, property improvements, new construction, renovations, buying machinery, equipment, as long as it lasts for the loan term, even IT upgrades.
Okay. What's off limits? What can't you use it for?
There's a list of ineligible uses too. Refinancing old debt is out. General working capital like payroll or inventory, no. Buying residential property, paying taxes or professional fees, and then specific types of businesses. Gambling, religious groups, political campaigns, adult entertainment.
Got it. Focused on tangible assets and long-term growth, not operating costs. What about the loan details? How much can businesses borrow?
The range is $1,000 up to $25,000.
Okay. Smaller scale loans.
Yeah. Aimed at potentially filling gaps or helping smaller projects. The application goes to the Community Development Department, and they say allow about 4 to 6 weeks for review.
And what do they look for when approving?
Key factors are creditworthiness. Can you repay? They'll want a personal guarantee and collateral to secure the loan. Plus, the business needs to put in at least 5% equity themselves. Skin in the game.
Right. The borrower needs to be invested too. What are the typical loan terms? Interest rates, repayment?
Terms are negotiable, up to a maximum of 10 years, sometimes less depending on what you're buying. They might offer a payment deferral for the first 6 months.
That could help a new project get off the ground?
Could, yeah. Important note, the borrower pays all the loan closing costs, the interest rate. It's fixed for the first 5 years. It's set at either 3% or 2 points below the prime rate when the loan's approved, whichever is higher.
So a floor of 3%.
Right. And it's fully amortized, meaning regular payments that cover principal and interest over the loan term. They might require property insurance, and there are penalties if you pay late.
Okay, sounds like a solid, supportive program for local businesses. Let's switch to TIF tax increment financing. We hear that term a lot. How does Big Lake approach TIF?
Right, TIF. In Big Lake, the basic idea is to encourage development or redevelopment projects that are desirable, but just wouldn't pencil out financially without TIF help. That but-for test is key.
Meaning the project literally wouldn't happen but for the TIF.
That's the standard they aim for. It's all guided by state law, of course, but their specific policy outlines how they evaluate requests. The big goal is projects that create quality jobs, attract or keep businesses, or improve housing. The but-for thing suggests they're trying to be targeted, you know, not just giving subsidies to projects that would happen anyway.
Use it to make the impossible possible. Got it. What specific things does Big Lake hope to achieve by using TIF?
Their policy lists quite a few objectives. Things like cleaning up blighted areas, encouraging high-quality redevelopment, stabilizing neighborhoods by upgrading housing, keeping or adding good jobs.
Jobs are always big.
Always. Mm-hmm. Also, sparking other private investment nearby, helping cover high redevelopment costs like cleaning up polluted sites, brownfields, making tricky sites workable, and meeting other city goals like good urban design or energy efficiency.
So it's a flexible tool for different kinds of challenges. What kinds of costs within a project could TIF potentially help pay for?
The policy gives examples. Design fees, site prep like digging and landscaping, buying the land itself, special assessments the city might levy, legal fees, environmental studies, relocation costs if needed, cleaning up contamination, rehabbing old buildings.
A pretty wide range.
It is, but the city always has the final say on which costs are eligible for reimbursement in any specific deal. They follow state law, but have discretion.
Okay. So what does a project need to even get its foot in the door for TIF consideration in Big Lake? What are the minimums?
Several key hurdles. First, the project absolutely has to meet at least one of those city TIF objectives we just talked about, like blight removal or enabling a project that meets the but-for test.
Okay, got to align with the goals.
Second, the developer must show proof that the project truly isn't financially feasible without TIF. They need to open their books, essentially.
And demonstrate the need.
Yeah. Exactly. The project also has to fit with the city's big picture comprehensive plan and the zoning rules. Developers need to provide studies, feasibility, appraisals, proof of other financing like bank loans. And they need to show they've done this kind of thing before successfully.
Track record matters.
Definitely. And finally, the amount of TIF requested should be the minimum needed to bridge the financial gap. They want private money maximized. And typically, it's pay as you go. Meaning the developer doesn't get the TIF money up front. They only get payments after the project is built and starts generating those new higher property taxes. The TIF is paid out from that increment.
Ah, so the city isn't out cash until the project proves itself by increasing tax revenue. Seems like a smart way to reduce risk.
It does. It aligns incentives.
Are there other things that make a TIF project look better in the city's eyes? Like preferred qualifications?
Yes. The policy mentions desired factors. Projects that generate a really high ratio of new taxes compared to before are good. They generally don't want to fund purely speculative projects, need to see market demand.
No. Build it and hope they come.
Less keen on that, yeah. They look at the land price deals. Don't want TIF subsidizing an overpriced land deal. They try to avoid giving one business an unfair edge over competitors because of the TIF. Or projects that overload city services.
Makes sense.
They prefer projects that fix environmental problems, especially cleanup. And generally, they favor projects that tick multiple boxes. Good design, fits the city plan, improves the community, big tax base boost, creates jobs, financially sound, the whole package.
So it's a holistic view, not just the numbers, but the overall quality and impact. Okay, last policy, tax abatements. How does that work in Big Lake? Different from TIF.
Similar goal, different mechanism. Tax abatement is also meant to encourage good development that wouldn't happen otherwise. But how it works is different.
Okay.
With abatement in Big Lake, the city agrees to give back its share of the property taxes that come from the increase in property value due to the project.
Ah, so not the whole property tax bill, just the city's portion of the new value created.
Exactly. Just the city's slice of the increment, you could say. They see it as another tool to grow the tax base, create jobs, strengthen business districts, and get high-quality construction.
So the city foregoes some new revenue for a while to make the project happen. What kinds of projects might qualify for this?
Generally, it's for situations where public help is needed to get a public benefit, like projects creating or keeping quality jobs, boosting the economic base, encouraging other private investment, helping with high redevelopment costs. Sound familiar?
Yeah, some overlap with the TIF objectives.
There is overlap in the goals. Also, things like implementing specific city policies, getting better architecture or green building practices, fixing up existing buildings, adding things like better signs or pedestrian walkways, making tough sites work, or even helping pay for public infrastructure needed for the project.
Okay. What specific costs can abatement help cover?
Eligible costs could be land purchase, building improvements, site work, public streets, or utilities tied to the project. What's not typically eligible are things that aren't fixed assets like movable equipment or working capital.
Similar to the RLF limitations there, how does the payment actually work? How is it structured?
It's usually set up as a direct payment from the city to the property owner, maybe once or twice a year.
A rebate, almost.
Sort of, yeah. It's calculated based on the city's share of the taxes on that increased property value. And like TIF, it's pay as you go. The payment only happens after the property owner has paid their full tax bill for that period.
So again, the city waits for the taxes to come in first.
Correct. And it's all formalized in a legal agreement between the city and the owner, spelling out the terms, the duration, how the amount is calculated. That amount could change year to year if tax rates or assessed values change.
Right. It's tied to the actual taxes generated. What are the key rules or guidelines Big Lake follows when granting abatements?
Several important policies. Pay as you go, as we said. Developer has to prove the but-for need, show the project won't work without it. The project can't put an unreasonable burden on city services compared to its benefit.
Okay.
Always requires a formal agreement. Developer needs to show they can actually pull the project off financially, experience-wise, maybe need guarantees. City likes it better if the county and school district are also offering abatement for the same project.
A team effort is preferred.
Seems so. Projects should align with the city's comprehensive plan. Abatement amount should be the minimum needed. Developer needs significant equity invested.
Skin in the game again.
Always. No abatements if the land price seems inflated or if it creates unfair competition. Generally, no abatements inside an existing TIF district, usually one tool or the other per project. Must follow state law limits. The benefit to the city has to outweigh the cost of the abatement. And there are limits on how long they last, typically up to 15 years, maybe 20, if the county and schools don't participate.
Wow, okay. That's a lot of detail, but it paints a really clear picture of how these tools work in Big Lake. This whole deep dive has been incredibly insightful. Seriously, digging into these budget documents shows so much strategic thought.
It really does.
It definitely gives you a much more accessible way to understand what the city's actually trying to achieve. I found those specific property goals really striking that targeted approach.
Mm-hmm. Very focused.
And getting the details on the RLF, TIF, abatement, the rules, the criteria, that's super useful for anyone thinking about investing or developing in Big Lake. So hopefully for you listening, this gives you a much clearer foundation for understanding Big Lake's approach to growth.
Absolutely. And, you know, thinking about these ambitious plans and how they rely on these specific tools like TIF and the RLF, it does make you wonder, doesn't it? What are the biggest opportunities, maybe the biggest potential hurdles for Big Lake as they try to execute this plan? Definitely something worth mulling over.
That is a great question to leave folks with. And hey, if you do want to get into the nitty-gritty, the full budget documents are up on the Big Lake City website. You can dive even deeper yourself. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.